Welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast, where we discuss new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
With us today is Gaines Kurgerson. Gaines is an executive director for Music City Code, associate director at UBS, international speaker, and a Microsoft MVP. Welcome, Gaines.
Thanks. Great to see you.
Yeah, so before we get started, could you tell us a little about yourself and kind of how you got started?
Sure. Well, I got into the programming side of the world early on in my high school years, but I didn't do it professionally until my first COBOL gig in 97, and then I did Microsoft Business Solutions Consulting for a bit. And I've actually been in consulting most of my career. It's been very .NET focused, very front-end, or very web-oriented. Lately, I started wanting to do more mentoring and leadership process improvement, so that's why I joined UBS. It's also, frankly, part of the reason why I started Music City Code. I wanted an opportunity to showcase leadership skills and the ability to do some of those things you don't get to do as a consultant.
I don't know that I've met anyone that mentions COBOL without currently doing COBOL. I think all the COBOL developers pretty much stayed in COBOL, right?
That was actually my first job after I started college. The summer after my first year as a freshman, I took a COBOL job and did that for a year and a half. But yeah, it certainly wasn't where I wanted to live. I much prefer the object-oriented world.
All right. And you said you moved into more of the .NET world. What was the biggest transition into moving from something like COBOL into that?
Well, my transition started with web page development. So you learn HTML and you learn enough JavaScript to get by. And you remember a tool, FrontPage?
Oh, yeah.
I think that was the first tool that I used for web development. And then Dreamweaver blew my mind because it let you tie in back-end databases. So I slowly got into VBScript, and then that transitioned to VB.NET, and then eventually C#. So I'm not sure it was ever a conscious decision. It was just an evolution of trying to apply my skills better in the business world.
And you've been working with Music City Code for a number of years, correct?
So I started Music City Code in 2015. It was actually after DevLink retired. That was an amazing conference that was here in Nashville for many years and then moved to Chattanooga. And it was all volunteer run, just like ours. But the organizer and the volunteers decided that they had other things they wanted to focus their time and energy on. So they retired it, and that left a huge vacuum here in Nashville. So we started this conference as just a one-day event. And it was just the code conference at first. And it wasn't until the next year we added an Agile conference. One of the local Agile community leaders really wanted to have a place for everybody to gather, but didn't really want to run his own event. So we paired up and brought that under the umbrella as a sister conference. And it's grown by over 40% every year. And this year we added the data conference, Music City Data.
So you're up to three conferences now?
Three conferences, but one event. So a lot of the logistics are shared. You know, we have one hotel room block we negotiate. We have on-campus housing for the speakers, and the dining is all shared. It's really just we have separate areas for the different communities to gather and focus on content and connecting with each other. But then we all get together for a big attendee party and party as a big IT community.
Is that anything like different tracks at a conference, or is this more like super tracks? Like
Super tracks might be a good way to put it. It's certainly track-like in that we have groups of content that you probably want to focus on, but our purpose isn't really in fact, we don't even have tracks at our conferences. We try to leave each session to stand on its own and its value to each individual attendee. What we want to focus on more is keeping those communities very tight-knit. If you're a software developer, you probably want to connect with other software developers and thought leaders in that community. And that becomes really difficult when the event gets too large and there's just too many people there. So we're trying to keep those communities and the gatherings small while all getting together at the same time. And hopefully that means companies are more likely to send their teams because they can say, everybody on our development team has somewhere to go and something to get out of this event.
So what are the logistics involved in arranging something like that? The number of conferences together all under one umbrella?
I'd say the logistics are extremely similar to doing one conference. The key for us has been making sure that each individual conference has a lead that's embedded in that community, that they can connect with the potential speakers and make sure they get submitted. They can help market the conference to the community. And most importantly, they can make sure it fits what the community really wants and needs. So it's something valuable to them.
Community is really important these days. Are there special considerations on making sure that people are felt as if they're included, or a lot of attention paid to inclusiveness?
Our main focus when it comes to inclusivity and diversity has been to reach out to as many groups and different types of people as possible. Of course, that's difficult because you have your own very small worldview, and it's been very educational for me personally to realize just how many different groups representing different diverse backgrounds there are. But that's been our main focus, is trying to get the word out and make sure they feel welcome and encouraged. And then, of course, once it comes to actual content selection, it's more about the value to the attendees than it is, you know, what your specific background or gender or ethnicity is.
So you said you were starting the data conference this year. How's the pulse on that, the excitement for having that conference added?
It's a bit of a leap of faith. Other than SQL Saturdays, I'm not really familiar with a lot of conferences or events that are focused solely on data. We've been seeing a lot more specifically around the data science community and big data, where a local technology council will organize an event specifically for that topic. Mm-hmm. But I felt like that was a bit more niche than the average person is usually looking for. I figure there are people who are working as database designers or whatever your job role is, that they're embedded in that world and they're more interested in connecting with other people who are on that same journey. And of course, learning some new technologies and seeing some new perspectives, but engaging in a community larger than just the SQL community. And so that's what we're trying to accomplish. But I'm not actually sure that there is another conference that I'm aware of that we could pattern it after. So
sure,
we're going to see how this year goes and what people like and what they don't and build on that.
What level of talks do you have at the Music City events? Are they beginner level, medium, intermediate, advanced?
I think the level depends a lot on the size of our conference. As we've had more room, we've been able to get a little bit more niche with our content and a little bit more advanced. But you always have to have that intro to whatever sort of content, because regardless of how advanced your attendees are, there's always something that they don't know that they're new to. So we try to make sure we have enough of that to where if somebody's interested in a topic, they can get a feel for the flavor of it and connect with somebody who can speak on that level that they'll understand what they're talking about. The advanced topics tend to be more in the workshop days, where you have at least 4 hours to dive into something and get your hands really into it.
Yeah, I ask mostly because of the data conference that you're adding. It seems like there's a lot of interest in data science, but maybe not a whole lot of knowledge in the majority of the community.
Sure. And the world of data science is so broad that it's difficult to know what people need to learn. The tool set alone is massive. So that's part of why I say it's a bit of an experiment. Kevin Klein is our lead for the data conference, and he reached out to the community that he was aware of. And we got more submissions than we needed for the conference. We were able to pick the best ones. But whether those mesh up with what the people who show up are really looking to hear from, we'll have to see how that goes.
That seems like kind of a relatively young genre for a conference, but it sounds like it might be ideally timed to be one of the early destination conferences for data-focused individuals.
We're hoping to help lead the charge in this new emerging field that, well, I shouldn't say new, it's been around forever, but it's becoming so much more important to businesses.
So I know you've been kicking around a topic idea for a talk around the psychology of organizing technical communities. Do you want to speak to that some?
Yeah, I mean, before I started the conference, I used to serve in some of the local groups, like the Nashville.net user group is in the leadership. And there were definitely some trends I noticed that groups who did certain things tended to be more successful, depending on how you measure success. And so that led me to then leverage some of those things and how to put together a conference. And I thought, you know, these aren't just valuable insights for somebody who's in one of these few roles of leading an event or a group, but it's really useful for anybody who's trying to get a group together on a specific topic. You know, if you're geeking out about something and you want to gather with other people on that topic, these are some helpful insights to have, I think.
So what thoughts have you had around the topic?
I think the biggest eye-opener was when I started researching habits, because we're all creatures of habit. And that sounds flippant to say, but when you think about your daily life, very few things in your day, in the grand scheme of things, are actual decisions. Most of them are things you do semi-automatically. And that transfers into how you relate to people and what sort of things you engage in as well. I've noticed that events that take place on the same day of the month at the same place on a regular basis, people make that part of their habit loop. They know every month I'm looking forward to this event. When you're driving somewhere and autopilot takes over and you end up somewhere and you didn't realize how you got there. It just happened by habit. That happens too. When you move events around from different places, different locations, people have trouble identifying where to go. But it goes deeper than that too. It goes to how to engage people. The primal instincts we have, where if you sit down to eat a meal with someone, that's a signal to your brain that this person is part of my tribe. They belong to the group that I belong to, and I can trust them. I relate to them. And these are things that recruiters have known for years. The recruiter wants to take you out to lunch and talk with you over a meal. And there's a good reason for that. And that's one of the reasons why groups who serve food actually find a lot more success. It's not so much people can't afford food and they want to come for the free meal. It's having a meal together helps create a sense of community.
We're definitely creatures of habit. My smartphone has picked up on that. So when I get in my car in the morning on a weekday, it knows that it's time to direct me towards work and can offer me the number of minutes to work and the fastest route. And if I get into my car on the weekend, it knows that I want to go mountain biking on Sunday or to the grocery store on Saturday or whatever the case may be. So certainly a lot of points of interest out there.
Another thing I've noticed is that the communities that are able to stand the test of time and don't fizzle out tend to be ones where more than just one person takes on the leadership role. And that can be a very difficult thing, especially for people who haven't been in a leadership role professionally, to understand how to delegate responsibility and how to give people a definition of success to work towards without prescribing the way that they're going to accomplish it. And if you're able to figure out how to accomplish that, and it's easier said than done, then what you end up with is every single person that gets involved takes some of that work off of you, the organization work off of you, but they also have more ownership and they help to promote mm-hmm. the event more and there's more passion for it.
Do you have a large group to help you with the Music City Tech conferences?
This year, I believe we have 30 crew members, and we define crew members as people who have some significant contribution to the organization or the production of the event. We're not talking about volunteers that show up that day and do a job that they've assigned to. We have a director for each group. We have a director for the production team, the marketing, sponsorship, volunteers. We sort of have a tech team, but we've tried not to roll a lot of our own solutions. We've used third-party solutions, so we didn't spend all our time and focus on those. But this coming year, that's going to be more of a focus.
Were these individuals recruited because you needed the help, or were they helping and they helped enough that they kind of earned this role?
Originally, they were definitely people we identified as being someone we could trust to take on that role of responsibility. But it's very quickly evolved to be people who very often were volunteers first. And by volunteering, they got to know the crew and see how much fun we had and what sort of stuff we did. And so then they got involved in the crew, the pre-planning portion. And then you give them some responsibility and you figure out very quickly who are the problem solvers who can delegate and take on that responsibility and who simply wants to show up and be told, here's something we'd help with, please do that.
It's kind of like running a business, basically.
I'd say almost all the concepts transfer pretty directly, except in my mind, when you're running volunteers, it's even more important that you're good at these things because you can't just say, well, if you don't do this, you're not getting a paycheck. You have to understand that their personal life comes first, their family and their job always come ahead of your volunteering. So it's more important that you facilitate a good working relationship there.
So it's more like correctly running a job.
I would say if you can run a volunteer team, then that should very easily transfer to a team of paid employees. At least that's what I'm hoping as I move more into the leadership world myself.
Let's head in that direction. You had mentioned that in your bio, you're associate director at UBS and that you're interested in leadership. And that was a deciding factor on taking that position. You want to kind of share your thought process in that particular position or heading in the direction of leadership?
I did get a lot of great experience in leadership and those skills as a consultant, because very often you're brought in as an expert in something, and you're not only helping to create a solution, but you're also helping to train the team and direct the project. And so there are skills that you use there, but you're never officially in that role. You know, people ask, how many direct reports have you had? Well, nobody really reported directly to me. I got them to do what I needed them to do, regardless of who signed their paycheck. So joining UBS was an opportunity for me to officially have a role of leadership. And also, UBS has a pretty well-established advancement path in their organization. You can look and see where you want to be and what kind of skills they look for to make that move. So I saw it as a place where with good mobility to grow and evolve. I'm currently not in a role where I have a lot of direct reports. I'm in a high visibility project area where they needed somebody to do some refactoring and more technical stuff. So we'll see where it leads.
Other than like leading Music City Tech, what other things have you done to kind of prepare or gain those leadership skills?
I have had some leadership experience as a volunteer firefighter. Within the county that I live in, everything outside the city limits is covered by volunteers. So that's given me a lot of opportunities to train and work in a very structured organization. And again, everybody there is volunteer. So you're not able to tell people what to do because you owe them a paycheck.
But I would think in the role of a firefighter, volunteer or not, it's very important to know the roles and responsibilities of the position that you're holding, whether it's that particular day, or I would assume that there would be some life and death choices at times, or at least security and safety concerns that you have to take into account.
Absolutely. It's extremely important that you train to be as perfect as possible, because when you need that training, you don't have a chance to do it a second time and do it better. You learn a lot of valuable aspects, such as not freelancing. That's not going off and doing something on your own that you haven't been told to do, because doing something on your own can easily get somebody else killed.
I think it has like a lot of relevant wisdom, I guess, when you're looking at even development. You know, maybe it's not going to get someone killed, but freelancing either on a project or in an organization or something like that, it has some pretty dramatic effects, or can have very dramatic effects on the success of a project, the success of an organization.
Yeah, it goes back to the giving a good definition of success or definition of done, saying, here's what I need you to accomplish. I may not be telling you specifically the steps involved in order to do it, but what's important is that you accomplish the what I'm telling you, and you don't go outside that result, right?
Yeah, and definitely, I mean, part of the importance there is on you, the person giving that order, right? So if you don't give, I've been actually struggling with this with one of my colleagues who's a little bit more junior than me. I'm kind of leading a project. He's often gone outside of the bounds that I was expecting. But part of that is on me, because I am not really giving very good definition of saying, hey, these are the bounds that we're looking for in this particular situation.
One way we address that on the Music City Tech crew is we have a Kanban board with cards, and the cards should have a definition of done. So as long as you meet the criteria that's on the card, you've done as good a job as you can be expected to do. So if there's a case where somebody doesn't hit that mark that you were looking for, you can very quickly identify, well, I just didn't give them good enough requirements, or maybe they misunderstood, and you can work on improving that for next time rather than making the same mistakes over and over.
Did you play sports as a child or growing up?
I played soccer as a kid and football in high school.
A lot of what you're describing really just hits home to me as kind of a good team dynamic and working together. I played soccer in high school and college as well. And really, you grow to trust your teammates and expect them to be where they're needed and being reliable and things like that. And it sounds similar to captain of a team or coaching of a team, that you kind of set those guidelines and really expect those individuals to do what's best for the team all along the way.
Absolutely. And then that's what we call the individual groups in our crew as teams. The director of marketing has a marketing team.
So you said you played soccer and football. Have any of the lessons you've learned playing team sports helped you along the way?
Well, I suppose the biggest one has been a matter of hustling and endurance. You know, once you've been through 4 hours of football practice in the South Carolina summer heat and made it all the way through and done that multiple times in a row, everything else just doesn't seem quite as challenging in some ways. So just telling yourself, like, I can just give it a little bit more effort. I can put a little bit more time into this or stick with it a little bit further. That was probably one of the biggest things that I took away from sports that apply to pretty much everything in life. Certainly being part of a team and how to support your team and knowing your role but then not being afraid to step outside your role if it's something that can help others. There's a ton of lessons that I've taken away, I'm sure.
Are there any other key moments in your career that might have helped you get to this point? Is there a specific leader that you looked up to or an opportunity that you took and would credit for your career path and where you've ended?
Oh, absolutely. My first job doing Microsoft stack development was for a company that was the director of development for that company was the person who was previously in charge of the IT department at my college. So that's how I got the job was he knew me from through school, which actually I think I was a thorn in his side because I was one of those kids who wanted a faster internet connection and was probably running an FTP or something that they would prefer me not to run. But apparently he got beyond that turmoil and he was a really great example for me as a leader. One of the things he focused on was making sure people weren't afraid to fail, giving you the opportunity to try new things and explore. And he also sat down with each person and talked about where they wanted to end up personally and made sure that those personal goals, if they didn't have them, helped them establish some, but also made sure that they lined up with where the company was heading and figured out how those two could work together. And I that's a key part to working with volunteers, certainly, is figuring out what their personal goals are and how, because everybody does something for their own reasons, right? I mean, even if it's just your self-image, like I see myself as someone who does a lot of good for the community, but you always get something out of it, even if it's just that sense of satisfaction. So figuring out what they're going to get out of it, is it just the satisfaction of helping out, or do they want to try new skills or engage new people, expand their network? You know, there's something that motivates them.
We just had Scott Drake on the show recently, and I think we're still in the editing process, but he's very interested in leadership and working on an organization around helping leaders succeed. Attended one of his talks at Codepalooza this spring and was really interested in learning to research and delve into topics that help you for your immediate next steps instead of researching and learning for something that might not come to fruition for a number of years. So I think it's really important to identify those early goals and those long distance goals and then figure out what steps need to be taken and then act on the immediate steps first.
Absolutely. I had a similar experience recently. I've been speaking on both data science and mixed reality because those were two areas that I was interested in and wanted to get more insight into. But I quickly came to the realization that while data science is a current need and something that people are investing in now, mixed reality, we're just not quite there yet with the hardware and the maturity. So that was a decision I had to make is, do I want to continue talking about something that's fun and that I enjoy, but that isn't going to lead to any short-term opportunities? Or would I rather focus on an area that I could certainly put all my time and effort into and still not even go very deep in, but I can apply it right now?
Yeah, I got to play around with your AR rig at MVP Summit last year, and that was very interesting. I think the tech still has a little ways to go. It certainly needs to come down in price and mobility and battery life and things like that. But I think the need is there for certain industries, but I just don't know that it's ready for those industries, for like automotive design or manufacturing or something like that, and being able to play with something in your reality through some kind of visual enhancement or something.
Yeah, it's definitely an emerging field and a young one at that, but it's exciting to see this and so many other new technologies such as self-driving vehicles. The pace of advancement is staggering compared to where we've been in the past. I'd like to start applying some of these new technologies to what we're doing. We're planning on building a system to manage our planning and organization for the Music City Tech event. And as part of that, we're looking to do some machine learning, put in some algorithms to help us determine which sessions might be of most interest to attendees based on their interactions. And part of that is gathering data at the event, not only feedback, but how many people were there 10 minutes into a session, how many people were there 10 minutes before the session ended, and see how many people left partway through. We're trying to gather as many data points as possible because it's still a little bit difficult to know what is going to be useful down the road.
IR cameras at the front of the room to count the number of bodies at any given time?
Yeah, I have a feeling that as soon as we start doing facial recognition and sending that up to cognitive services on our attendees, they might have an issue with that. But we haven't ruled it out. We'll just make sure everybody knows or signs a waiver or something.
Are you using or are you considering using Azure for that or some other system?
We're certainly considering using Azure because we are a nonprofit, and Microsoft Philanthropies gives out $5,000 a year in Azure credit to nonprofits. So we've got a lot of potential spend there without costing us a lot.
So how are you gathering all that data?
Right now, it's all manual. We really haven't implemented a lot of automatic processes. I would love to, for instance, put a beacon on every attendee's lanyard and record their location coming in and out of sessions. But there is another conference in Tennessee. CodeStock tried doing that, and what they found is they got more data than they knew what to do with. So we haven't made that a priority just yet, but it's certainly, I'd be excited to try some of those things.
I would imagine getting more data than you know what to do with is a better alternative than getting far less than would be statistically significant.
Well, in the end, it's the same result if you don't know what to do with it, right?
Yeah, I guess my hope is that eventually you would figure out what to do with it.
Sure.
Release it to the internet. Somebody will find some cool way to visualize it and work with it.
And maybe that's the answer, is crowdsourcing some of this.
Well, one of the things we ask everyone, do you have any advice that you might like share specifically to someone who's just kind of getting started in the industry?
I think it depends on the phase that you're in. If you're, for instance, just graduating college, you might want to try a lot of things and see which direction you want to go. I found consulting to be a great opportunity for that. 6-12 month engagements, just enough time to get involved in the company and see what works and what doesn't for them, and then move on to something else and see what looks right there. But then once you're past that point to where you have a general idea of what the world looks like and what direction you might want to go in, I think it all comes down to setting goals and deciding which things will move you towards that goal and trying to do those on a regular basis.
So how might our listeners be able to kind of keep up with you?
I'm Gaines K on Twitter. That's G-A-I-N-E-S-K. And I don't tweet a lot. So mostly I respond to people who tweet at me. A lot of my involvement is really at conferences. I'll be at KCDC in Kansas City coming up. I'll be at DevUp in St. Louis. I'm going to do Code on the Beach in Atlantic Beach, Florida. And I believe that's in August. Keep an eye out for me at your local conference. And if I'm not there, ping me and let me know about it. So maybe I can be there next time.
So Music City Tech, do you have any tickets still available?
Yes. For some reason, people wait to the last minute to register often. So we don't see that final spike until the last week. So I guess if any of your listeners are hearing this during the first week it's out, the last week of May, then tickets are probably still available. And you can go to musiccitytech.com for more information and for a link to tickets. So we kick it off with workshops on Thursday, May 31st. And then the conferences actually take place on Friday and Saturday, June 1st and 2nd. So it all depends on whether you just want to go to the data conference, which is just Saturday, or Music City Code or Agile, which is Friday and Saturday, or just get the whole thing. We do have all access passes for a pretty hefty discount.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Gaines. We appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. Know you're pretty busy trying to get everything wrapped up before the kickoff to the conference.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me on.
That was Gaines Kurgosen, Executive Director for Music City Code, Associate Director at UBS, International Speaker, and Microsoft MVP.
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
And find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.